Hello, everybody. This is Mallory Flowers on behalf of Jennifer Shelton Associates, and we are coming to you live from Washington, D.C. Welcome to our webinar Wednesday series. Our webinars are held every Wednesday in 2018 at 12 p.m. and 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And our speakers range from accountants to attorneys and other industry professionals. The full schedule for the rest of the year is on our website underneath the webinar tab. In the interest of time, we do not take questions, and our speaker's contact info is posted on the last slide. So if you have any questions, please contact the speaker directly. The recordings are on our website underneath the archived webinar tab, as well as on our YouTube channel. All right, this is just a quick word about us. Jennifer Shelton Associates is based in downtown Washington, D.C., and we help both product and service companies with federal contracting. Our clients are domestic and foreign, defense contractors and civilian, and our services range from market analysis reports to contract vehicles, including the GSA schedule. We can also help you with proposal writing and post-award contract administration. More information about our services and upcoming events can be found on our website. All right, so we're going to go ahead and dig into today's presentation, which is GSA CTAs, What You Need to Know. And today's speaker is Mark Amadeo. You can learn more about his background on this slide. Thank you, Mark, for joining us today, and I'm going to go ahead and hand it over to you.
Thanks, Mallory, and thanks, everyone, for listening in. So today, we're going to talk briefly about GSA CTAs, or contractor teaming arrangements. And before we get into things, I just want to make a couple of points to put things into a larger perspective. Now, as many of you know, and as we've discussed in prior webinars on joint ventures and mentor-protege arrangements, over the last few years, there's been a push in government contracting to increase the ways that small businesses team up with each other and with other large businesses in order to enhance their capabilities and increase government contracting opportunities. Now, the discussions of joint ventures and mentor-protege relationships, they usually anticipate the typical multi-year government contracting scenario with procurements that are worth hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars. Well, if you're a commercial vendor with a GSA schedule contract, you're selling office supplies or furniture or computer equipment or off-the-shelf software, and you don't need a partner to create or to distribute product, you might think that teaming and collaboration concepts are not useful or applicable. But in fact, the GSA has implemented a form of teaming that is intended to make collaborations among GSA schedule holders fruitful. So we're going to touch on these contracting teaming arrangements today. Next slide. So we'll start with what contractor teaming arrangements are not. The term contractor teaming arrangement is a fairly common term, and that's in part because the regulations under FAR use the term contractor teaming arrangement to describe the two basic ways that companies work together to perform under a contract. And that description is found in the definition of contractor teaming arrangement under FAR 9.6, which sets out the horizontal relationship that companies can enter into in the form of joint ventures or partnerships when they act as prime contractors. Now, FAR 9.6 also sets out the vertical relationships that companies can form when a prime contractor works with a subcontractor. However, when we're talking about GSA contractor teaming arrangements, we're talking about something else. And in fact, the GSA says on its website that FAR 9.6 contractor team arrangements do not apply to GSA schedule teaming arrangements. And why is it important to know this? Well, as we'll discuss, there's not a lot of regulatory guidance on GSA CTAs. So when you look for guidance on CTAs in GSA materials or in any decisions by GAO, for example, if you see the term contractor teaming arrangement, that reference may be to FAR 9.6 contractor team arrangements and not to GSA CTAs. Next slide, please. So the GSA contractor teaming arrangements that we're talking about today is not defined in FAR, and there are no regulations, unfortunately, on GSA CTAs. Instead, the arrangements and how they work are set out on GSA's website and in GSA guidance. And under that guidance, a GSA contractor team arrangement, or CTA, is an arrangement in which two or more GSA schedule contractors team together to provide a total solution to meet a government contracting agency's needs and requirements. So if you have an agency that issues an RFQ for a task or delivery order with several requirements under one or more GSA schedules, a GSA CTA is one way that two vendors who individually can meet some but not all of the requirements with the items that are covered by their GSA schedule contracts, it's one way that they can come together and collectively provide an agency with a more comprehensive solution. Next slide, please. So one thing to keep in mind when we say that schedule holders team together is that the CTA is simply an arrangement where the parties agree to collaborate with each other without forming a separate legal entity like an LLC. And in fact, GSA schedule holders shouldn't create a new entity for the CTA because under GSA's guidelines, an award or task order must be made to a GSA schedule contract holder. So if a new entity is created to submit proposals or to act for the CTA partners, that new entity would first have to go through the process of becoming a GSA schedule holder, and that's just not necessary. Now, as for mechanics, typically the first step is for GSA schedule holders to enter into an agreement that binds the parties together and spells out their responsibilities. Now, we'll talk more about CTA agreements in a few minutes. And then the next step is the parties will typically identify RFQs or solicitations for goods or services that are covered by their GSA schedule contracts. And in responding to RFQs or solicitations, the parties should make it clear that their proposal is submitted on behalf of a CTA. Now, if a team is then awarded a delivery or task order, the ordering agency will typically work through a CTA team leader, which is one of the members of the CTA, that acts as the point person for the contract administration. And one thing to note, and this may seem obvious, but a task or delivery order that's issued to a CTA can't conflict with any of the CTA members' GSA schedule contracts. And then lastly, when it comes to the procedures that an agency has to follow when it issues a delivery or task order to a GSA CTA, the GSA guidelines state that agencies should use special ordering procedures, which can be found in the Mass desk reference, rather than the typical ordering procedures under FAR 8.4. Next slide, please. Now, if an agency sets aside an order for a small business or a socioeconomic group, if a CTA group wants to compete for that set aside, all of the members of the CTA have to be small or within the socioeconomic group. So one thing to note about small business set-asides is that the limitation on subcontracting by small businesses under FAR still apply. So if the CTA receives an order that is a set-aside for a small business, the team members, which again all have to be small, must perform at least 50% of the work. So the total work that's performed by the subcontractors of the team members can't exceed 50%. A few more words on subcontracting. If the CTA members are in a prime contractor position with respect to their relationship with the government, but each member can subcontract out part of its work, and the subcontractor doesn't have to be a schedule holder. Still, ultimately, the pricing that's offered to the government for work or supplies by the subcontractor can't exceed the team members' GSA schedule pricing. And then lastly, agencies might specify not only the GSA schedule for the items that they seek to procure, but also the individual subcategories of items or SINs, And so CTA members should make sure that their schedule contracts list the appropriate SIMs. Next slide, please. So let's talk a little bit about the benefits of CTAs. Now, from a government agency standpoint, CTAs permit agencies to streamline their orders. So by issuing orders to CTAs with members that hold multiple schedule contracts and list multiple SINs, the result is that an agency may be able to have several of its requirements met with a single order. And then from the team member's perspective, one of the pros is that each team member, by virtue of its GSA schedule contract, has privity of contract directly with the government. So each is considered a prime contractor, and each has a direct legal relationship with the paying order agency. And then lastly, when team members include members with different schedule contracts, the CTAs potentially reduce the number of open market items that vendors may need to otherwise offer outside of their GSA schedule contract. As for the cons, a big one in my view is the absence of regulations. The guidance is kind of spread out in multiple locations. I mean, you'll find it in the GSA website or in the Mass desk reference or in other GSA materials. So finding guidance on a particular issue might require a bit of hunting around. And then another con is that certain federal systems are not equipped to handle GSA schedule awards to teams with multiple vendors. So in particular, the federal procurement data system currently will only accept information relating to one contractor per order. So the current practice is for buying agencies to determine which CTA member is realizing the preponderance of the revenue from an order and report that contractor's information to FPDS. Okay, next slide, please. Now, we said that each team member has privity of contract with the ordering agency. And each team member is a prime contractor and is responsible to the government for delivering items off of its GSA schedule contract. So what happens if one of the members does not perform or performs poorly? And this is an area where you would want to have a clear regulatory explanation, but unfortunately, again, there are no regulations. But according to GSA's guidance, the government retains the traditional remedies that apply to the GSA schedule contract, including termination for cause and termination for convenience. So the ordering agency can terminate the GSA schedule contract of the offending CTA member. Now, as for negative past performance evaluations, according to GSA guidelines, agencies should enter the BATI evaluation in CPARS only with respect to the non-compliant team member. So a team member that has provided the items under its GSA contract and has performed well should not be negatively evaluated. So in that sense, the risk of non-performance by one team member is somewhat limited with respect to the other team members. Next slide, please. Now, CTA agreements or documents are drafted by team members, and the government has no role in creating it. Now, that being said, the GSA has made recommendations on what should be included in the CTA agreement or document, and a number of them are listed there on the slide. And we'll just touch on a few. So the CTA agreement should state the period of duration. It should identify the members by name and their addresses and their GSA schedule contract numbers, and it should identify points of contract. The CTA agreement should also identify a team leader to be the one point of contact for overall contract administration issues. And the agreement should also describe the process for replacing team members. And team members may also want to identify potential replacements. But a big suggestion is that the agreement should contain an explanation of the responsibilities of the members for the deliverables, who is doing what and who's delivering what. and each team member should only be providing items off of their own GSA schedule contract. And then another important suggestion is that the CTA document should not conflict with any of the other members' GSA schedule contracts. Next slide, please. So the CTA agreement should indicate the unit prices or hourly rates for supplies or services, and the prices that are charged for each member's items must be at or below the applicable member's GSA schedule contract prices. With regard to invoices and payments, each team member can submit its own invoices or can have the team lead submit them. And in terms of payments, the GSA recommends that the payments by the ordering agency be made separately to each team member directly. In any event, the CTA agreement should designate the responsibilities for invoicing and payment and should reflect that the members agree on how the payments are made. Next slide, please. Now, each team member is responsible for reporting its own sales and for reporting the related industrial funding fee, and the CTA agreement should state that. Now, as far as performance evaluation, FAR requires that ordering agencies enter evaluations in CPARS for all orders that exceed the simplified acquisition threshold. And as we said earlier, each member is responsible for its own performance. Well, the CTA agreement should memorialize that and specify under whose name the government should evaluate performance in CPARS for the particular schedule items. Next slide, please. So some last suggestions on CTAs. Now, CTAs provide lots of flexibility to contractors and ordering agencies. But to capitalize on those opportunities that may be available, GSA schedule holders should identify potential partners as early as possible in the process. Now, as many of you may know, you can have very tight, rigid, and short deadlines for responding to RFQs, and the parties may simply run out of time if they have to not only identify potential partners, but also hammer out a CTA agreement before they submit their proposal. Now, on that note, schedule holders may also want to consider pre-negotiated CTA agreements so that once they've identified their teaming partners and the potential agency customer or the products or services that they're going to market, they can then begin to hammer out the outlines of their CTA agreement before an RFQ or a solicitation actually comes out. And then lastly, even if an RFQ doesn't ask for it, the parties may want to go ahead and submit their CTA document or agreement when they submit their proposal, first to make sure that the ordering agency is aware that the proposal is being submitted on behalf of a CTA, and secondly, to demonstrate collectively the CTA members have the capability to meet the agency's requirements. Well, that's all I have for my presentation. Thanks again, Mallory. And I want to thank everyone for listening. And if you have any questions, my information is up on the last slide. So please don't hesitate to contact me.
All right. Thank you, Mark. That was a lot of great information. And thank you for sharing your time with us today. And thank you for everybody who joined us. Like you said, if you have any questions, please contact him with the information you see on your screen. At 12:30, we are covering P-cards. So join us then. Thank you.
Thanks.